There's drama downtown in Fargo as the city has gotten on the county board's bad side about how to handle the jail. There's also drama downtown in the city offices as more is known about why four senior members of the communications department have resigned en masse. And there's not much drama when it comes to Donald Trump's popularity in North Dakota, but is he the most popular politician in the state? A new poll says no. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Holstrom here with you for the Steve Holstrom Show. It's August 14th, 2025. And the Minnesota State High School Girls Softball Tournament was still won by a guy, and we are still coming to you every afternoon with our daily report card on what has happened in the world around us. And then we get to do a second report card where we get to play judge and jury, umpire, however you want to call it, about what has happened today. And that's where we call on you to be involved in the program. We'd love to hear from you today with your reaction to the news of the day. This is your invitation to give us a call, email, or text. Let us know what you think about what we're talking about. If you've got an opinion that you want to use the time to sound off about, that would be great. You can also give some perspective, maybe what we're missing or what we need to think about with a story that maybe seems one way, but we should really think of it a little differently. I love that. When all the information out there, maybe all of the public sentiment is going one direction, then someone stands up and says, you know, I'm not so sure that that's right. And many times, those of you who call this program, email or text, I say, you know what? That's a really good point. So this is your opportunity today to make the show better by giving a call, text, or email today. 701-271-1100 is the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They have recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment and get in this week at valleychristian.co, valleychristian.co. If you want to send us a text, you can sure do that, 701-237-1590. And if you want to email us, that is studio@flagfamily.com. Coming up as soon as we are done here with the Steve Holstrom Show tonight, a very special program for you, the Tax Bill Town Hall. 6 to 8 p.m. tonight, Scott Hannon and myself will be talking through the different aspects of the what's officially called the 2025 Reconciliation Bill. But if you listen to the president, it was the one big, beautiful bill. And that's kind of what we've come to know it as. A very complicated bill because it had a lot of old things in there that were renewed, continued, and a bunch of new things in there as well. Not only was this a piece of legislation, it was really much more than that. It was the launching pad for Donald Trump's economic agenda. And if you know Trump, the way that he is going to try to make the country better is prosperity. Prosperity and safety, I guess you could say. But when you think Trump, don't you think the money side of things? I do. He's been pretty good on some of the other things, too. And the culture war stuff has been a little bit better than I thought as well. But certainly you think of Trump and you think about money and you think about the economy and you think about spending, you think about revenue generation. And of course, that's hijacked by a lot of people who just want to talk about the bad parts of it or the parts that don't work out maybe quite as good as you thought. There's a lot of really good stuff happening there. We're going to dig into the, we'll just call it the tax bill for sake of the conversation. It's a little easier to say than all the other things. But it is one big bill, and if you listen to people in the business community, there's a lot of beauty in it. So we're going to break it all down for you. We'll have some guests on the program tonight. If you've been one of those people who have heard something about no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, but it seems kind of confusing, okay, like how does this really work? We're going to break all that down for you tonight. We're going to talk a lot about energy in North Dakota as well. We're going to talk about border security, some of the other things that came along for the ride in this bill that maybe people aren't talking a whole lot about, but those of us on the conservative side are very interested in. So we'll do a lot of, I think, really interesting things tonight. You will enjoy this program, I believe, and I know you're going to get a lot out of it. This will be one of those radio programs. And by the way, we're going to be on video, too. They're putting our ugly mugs on video tonight here as well on our YouTube channel, our website as well. Facebook, it'll be all over the place. You'll be able to watch it or listen to it. And you can listen, of course, on the radio, on the mobile app, the smart speaker, on your computer. Lots of different ways to catch it. One of those programs where you might want to whip out a pad and pencil and take a few notes on it, because this might be something where you can go to your buddies at coffee tomorrow and say, okay, we've all been talking about how this is going to work. Here's how this senior bonus thing is going to work, or the tax on tips or whatever it might be that you are interested in. And as I was preparing for this program, I was reminded of how many really good things were in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was extended in this bill. I had forgotten about a few of them. And there's some new pieces in there that really make a difference, too. It might change the way you file your taxes. So we got a lot of ground to cover tonight. I can't wait to do that. So for the next 4 hours, keep it right here. There's nowhere else to go if you want to make sure that you get up to speed. Here's how I look at it. You cannot be sure that you have learned as much about our world as you would be if you made sure to listen to the next 4 hours. So you don't want to put your head on the pillow tonight and have some regrets and say, I could have got smarter today, but I chose not to. And if I would have listened to Stephen Scott, I maybe would have had a little bit more. And we've got some experts, too, to weigh in as well. So check that out. 6 o'clock, as soon as our program is done tonight. All right, let's get to it. The 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines, rapid-fire rundown of what's happened today. We start with the Almanac for August 14th. My brother Gordy having a birthday today. He is likely not listening. Because he's still working. He's in Alaska. He's a pipe fitter, sprinkler fitter, actually, up there. And those guys, so he's about lunch break time. Don't think he's listening today, but if you are, happy birthday, brother. And happy birthday to you, if it is your birthday as well. Average high for this day, August 14th, is 81. The reason that's notable is it has fallen a degree from yesterday. So we are now going the other direction on average high temperatures. We're starting to fall. Not much today, and boy, we're not falling today, are we? Holy smokes, 86 and humid in Fargo. It is an honest summer day today. 57 is the average low, record high. 100 in 1935, record low 35 in 1968. Sunrise this morning was at 6:23, and the sun will set at 8:38. I can officially report to you that we have reached that time of the summer where I cannot go get in 18 holes of golf after work anymore. I tried it last night. I did play 18, but I lost like 4 balls on the last couple of holes. I had no idea where they were going. If they weren't in the fairway, and mine many times are not, I'm like, they're in the rough, and I have no idea. So I had to drop a few balls down to finish up. Didn't record the score. Probably should have for the old handicap, but I thought, you know what? This is not an honest score. It would have been high 80s, I think, and I've been playing a lot better than that. But I can just tell you, it's tough to get a lot done now after work, for me anyway, after 6 o'clock. Not that you care, but anyway. Let's see, what else can I tell you here? In the markets today, we had a very nondescript day. We've had record after record on the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. The Dow today was down 11 points. S&P 500 was up 2, and the NASDAQ was down 2. So basically an unchanged day. There was a hot inflation report, hot in a bad way, today that came out just before 7:30 today. And for a while, the markets didn't like it. But then somehow stocks found a way to mostly get back to zero, or in some cases win. And that's a bullish sign, because this was not good news today. We'll tell you about this story. And it was one of those what kind of inflation stories here. And the market shrugged it off. That is not nothing, friends. It's not nothing. WTI crude oil today up $1.28 at $63.93. Gold today down $26 an ounce, while silver was down 56 cents an ounce. Bitcoin today, oh, maybe giving me a chance to get back in. Not get back in, get in for the first time. Down $4,300 today, 3.5%, 118,204. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas is $3.16, and that's up a penny from yesterday. North Dakota average price $2.91. South Dakota $2.98. Minnesota $2.96. Diesel fuel today $3.71, unchanged from yesterday. Well, isn't this interesting? We got a little. What do we want to call this? No, I was going to say domestic dispute, but that's, I don't think that's the right term when we're trying to be clever Nothing to make light of about a domestic dispute, but a little family feud, maybe, between the Cass County Commission and the City of Fargo. They are apparently, reports WDAY Radio, at odds over how to extend an existing jail inmate housing contract. During a county commission meeting this was yesterday, the panel decided to vote next time around about implementing a contract termination clause. Story goes that back in 2023, the county attempted to raise jail rates on Fargo from $85 to $120 per inmate received from the city. And the city would pay that fee if the person under arrest in Fargo being transferred to the county jail allegedly broke a city ordinance. But one of the lingering sticking points to extend the contract with the higher fees includes Fargo wanting the county jail to accept a larger amount of an inmate's personal items. I guess they were just supposed to store them there. Sheriff Johnner tells our newsroom the jail just doesn't have room to store personal property. We're not five-star storage over here. And Johnner says some of the items have been hazardous, like explosives or even guns. So we have reached out to the city for comment. We're waiting to hear back. But there is just this little spat about should you take their stuff or not. I wouldn't think this would be enough to make it so that there was maybe a scenario out here under which the city can't send inmates over. I don't think that'll happen, but isn't that interesting? We know more today about the reason that four senior-level staffers in the city of Fargo's communications department abruptly resigned. They're going to be done on Sunday. And all four of them kind of submitted their letters of resignation at the same time. Greg Schildberger, who's the chief communications officer, says he doesn't know how the communications team can keep doing what they're asked to do and have any life outside of work. Apparently overworked, too many hours. I don't know if you have 12 people on your team, and so it's 12 times 8, that's like 96 hours of work every day. It's interesting to me that there's that much to do. I'm not doubting what he says. It's interesting to me. And similar sentiments were passed along by Katie Edish in her resignation level. She said ongoing levels of stress, daily anxiety, and toxic work culture fostered by city administration and human resources have made it impossible for me to continue in good conscience. So that's the number two in charge there. So isn't it something? There's a complaint that is alive within the city from one of the workers talking about a hostile work environment from the supervisor. Supervisor is saying it's a hostile work environment from the people above them, and so on and so on. So that's what that's all about. Also today, Fargo police have identified the man who was killed during an attack this month in downtown Fargo. You might remember the 19-year-old Tobias Walker on the early morning hours of August 3rd, used a skateboard to beat a 55-year-old Fargo man, and he ended up dying from his injuries over the last couple of days. Well, we now know that his name was John Pilcher. He was a Fargo resident, and for whatever reason was walking along the 300 block of Broadway at that particular time and was assaulted by Tobias Walker, who used a skateboard to beat Pilcher, apparently, to death. We don't know anything more about the case, about what led to the infraction or the assault, but now a man is dead. Now we know who did it. A Fargo man is facing a felony assault charge after beating a man with a folding lawn chair outside of the New Life Shelter in South Fargo, so that's happening. And a West Fargo man has been charged after a domestic incident earlier this week where he apparently broke a woman's collarbone. I put these stories in. I don't usually put these in, but in light of all of the crime stories going on these days, I feel like this is a time for us to have the best understanding possible of how much crime is going on in Fargo. I'm not telling you that these things haven't always happened at the same statistical level. I don't know all of that. I'm just kind of giving you the full story, and so now you know. Again, we're a city of, you know, a couple hundred thousand people, so 2-3 incidents, I guess it's up to you to decide if you think that's too many or not. In Moorhead today, a Fargo man yes, in Moorhead, who a jury found guilty of trying to shoot and kill his brothers, has been sentenced to almost 16 years by a Clay County judge. The forum with that story today. Prosecutor Pamela Foss asked Judge Tammy Merkins to sentence Francis Oshiti, I hope I'm saying that right, apologies to the family if I'm not, asked for a sentence of 19 years, noting the brazen attitude of this. Basically, just walked out and pulled out a gun, tried to kill his brother. The judge said 19 seems a little too much, but we'll go with 16. So you get 16 years for trying to shoot and kill your brother. And then what did I hear with the crime yesterday? That it could be 4 years, minimum of 4 years for the kid we were just talking about, Tobias Walker. 10-year maximum. Maybe the fact it was a gun means something. I don't know, but I thought that was interesting. I thought that was... in light of the other crime, I thought that was a lot. Not saying it's too much. I'm just saying relatively speaking. The North Dakota News Cooperative puts out a couple, three polls a year. They've come out with their latest one. And it shows that Kelly Armstrong is the most popular politician in the state when it comes to the statewide people. He has 66% approval, 26% disapprove. President Trump is a second. 64% approval, 35% disapprove. Boy, there's not a whole lot of people unsure about Trump, right? 1%? People either love him or hate him. Next up is John Hoeven. He's got 63% approval to 31% disapprove. Kevin Cramer, 59% approve to 37% disapprove. And Julie Fedorchuk, 54% approval, 27% disapprove. 19% say not sure, just a little too early. She has been in office the shortest amount of time, so I don't think there are any smoking guns there, but thought that was interesting. We'll talk a little bit later about the trends and how that's changed, at least for Trump over time. Bismarck Tribune reports, by the way, we'll do that. When are we going to do that? In the next segment, so not long. Officials have confirmed a case of animal anthrax in Stark County, the first this year in North Dakota. It happened in a beef cattle herd in the Dickinson area. So we seem to have a few of those every year. We got the first one now of the summer. Star Tribune reports that Minnesota lost 4,400 jobs in July, and the unemployment rate ticked up to 3.5%. Of course, in the headline, they blame Trump and say it's all Trump's fault. If you dig a little bit deeper into the story, you see why. They say that government experienced the greatest monthly losses with declines in local and state positions. Federal jobs were mostly flat through the month, but have declined since July of last year. So I guess not a big surprise there. Attorney General Drew Wrigley reports NewsDakota.com has announced the release of a new concealed weapon license validation tool. It's supposed to help federal firearms licensees in verifying the status of a purchaser's concealed weapons license when using an NICS transaction number as part of the firearm purchase. The tool, they say, will provide a simple, secure, and efficient red light, green light validation system that ensures that a concealed weapon license is active and valid at the time of purchase. Now, if you're a gun owner, I'm just curious what you think about this. Is this something you have a problem with, or do you say, yeah, you know what, that's the process now, let them do that better, no problem there. And I'll finish with this one. I got some more stories for you, and I'll have to move them later. It's just a full rundown today. Wholesale prices rose 0.9% in July. This is the producer price index, way more than expected. Estimates were 0.2%, and it came in at 0.9, almost a full percent. Biggest monthly increase since June of 2022. If you want to read into that, there's a lot of conclusions that we could draw there. But we heard yesterday that the consumer price index had not really risen much at all. Wholesale prices up big. So one of the theories that I've been hearing today is that the wholesalers, the retailers, those who are importing products are swallowing some of the tariff costs and not passing them along to the customer. So that might be part of it, most of it, or all of it. I'm not exactly sure. But those are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Thursday afternoon. When we come back here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, mortgage rates have hit their lowest level in a year. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Mortgage rates drifted lower this week, hitting the lowest levels since October of 2024. That's right, the lowest levels of the year. 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, as of Wednesday, nationwide average 6.58%, down from 6.63 a week earlier. 15-year, well, that's a little bit lower, 5.71, down from 5.75 a week earlier. Rates are continuing to move lower, says Yahoo Finance, after fresh inflation data furthered Wall Street's conviction that the Federal Reserve will cut benchmark interest rates in September. Mortgage rates are not directly controlled by what the Fed says that the rates should be for the rates that the banks loan money to each other, which is what they are setting when they when you hear that they're raising or lowering interest rates by a quarter point or half point or whatever. But mortgage rates do tend to move based on expectations about future rate policy. And as more people want to invest in the country by buying U.S. bonds and long-term treasury notes. So it's not exactly linear, but typically when you're seeing rates lowering on other things, the mortgage rates continue to follow that pattern as well. So I thought you might be interested to know that. And I wonder if your favorite mortgage broker is seeing a little bit more activity right now. 6.58%. That means if you pay a discount point or two, you might be able to get that puppy down to, what, 6 1/8, 6 1/4 maybe? That's not too bad. Certainly, historically, it's pretty good. It's not 3%. I think I got my house at 2.75 or 2.875, I think it was, back when we got really lucky when we built our house 4 years ago, whatever. It's not that, but it's better than 7 where things have been at for a while. All right, when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show, we're going to visit with Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk from D.C., and we're going to ask her a few questions about how things are going in D.C., and I want to know if the president could do a little more to help small businesses. This one big, beautiful bill, there were some really good things for big business in Wall Street, but how about Main Street, as a banker friend of mine said it earlier today. So we'll ask Julie about that and other things here coming up in a few minutes. First, though, checking news and weather. Snowbusters LLC is your local source for small engine repair in the FM area, and they are now Snowbusters, an authorized dealer of Ferris brand lawnmowers. So there are Lawnbusters over there, too. And Ferris brand mowers are renowned for their multi-patented suspension technology. Commercial-grade zero-turn mowers, they come with decks of up to 72 inches. Oh, that's 6 feet at a time you're cutting off. That's good stuff there. And that Cat Turbo diesel engine brings up to 48 horsepower and gives you a smooth ride all at the same time. That sounds like a darn good lawnmower. I'm no expert in this matter, but if I'm going to buy a lawnmower someday, I want that one. Give Snowbusters a call today, 218-512-0538, 512-0538, 512-0538. Or stop by the shop at 1609 27th Street South in Moorhead to check out the Ferris brand mowers. Snowbustersfm.com if you want to check them out online. They know how to get it done over there. Snow, lawn, they can take care of whatever needs to be taken care of. I did see that the Duane's House of Pizza, if you're talking about good pizza, Duane's has some very solid pizza, and they are now opening at their new location. They didn't go too far. They're still on University Drive there, just off of, just north of I-29 with the big hospital right across the street. They got an expanded seating area, outdoor patio, and they are open this afternoon and ready for dine-in pickup and delivery. I would call and get a Duane's pizza, except we're doing this one big, beautiful bill town hall tonight, Scotty and I'd be sleeping by about 6:30 if I had a big plate full of pizza right now. But it still sounds darn good. Absolutely. Another thing that sounds good is to speak with one of our elected officials, our congressional delegation from North Dakota, and Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk, always kind to give us a few minutes here once a month on a regularly scheduled chat with her. Hello, Miss Julie. How are you?
Hello, Steve. I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I'm great. Where are you at today? I know you were in Grand Forks yesterday. Are you in D.C.? Are you still here in God's country?
No, I am most definitely in God's country. I was in Fargo for the morning, and then now I'm actually just pulled into Bismarck.
Okay.
So I have some things here tonight and tomorrow. So, yes. covering the state.
When do you go back to D.C.?
Not until after Labor Day.
Okay, nice.
So in the state for the rest of the month. So, yeah, it's exciting. Get a lot of opportunities to visit with folks all over the state. We're going to be in Dickinson next week. We'll be in Minot, Devil's Lake, and lots of rugby, lots of places in between up in Grand Forks. So we're going to crisscross as much as we possibly can and cover as much ground as we're able.
So what is, if you could pinpoint maybe one big thing that people want to talk about right now as you travel around the state, what are people bringing to you as far as concerns, questions, things they're excited about? Not when you ask questions to them, but what do they kind of offer up on their own that you think is interesting, maybe a trend that you're seeing as a big idea or big concept people want to talk about?
Well, constant comment from businesses is definitely visa reform. And, you know, there's a need for workers in our state and in most places. And so how can folks get those workers both amongst the existing population with workforce training initiatives, schooling, trade schools, et cetera, and then immigration and visas? So that's probably one of the most common topics of discussion, in addition to just really wanting to get control of government spending and create a stronger business climate for everybody to be competitive and make more money.
Yeah, interesting. That is something I have heard, too, quite often, that we need people. There's people that seem to want to come here and work. So how do we get this done in a legal way without giving them full-time status? Do you feel like the president and his team are hearing that, too? And do you think that they have put that as a priority for work here in the near future?
Well, I definitely do. And, you know, they're working hard on maintaining order on our borders and having a sensible immigration policy and status. It's that absolutely essential that we do this in a thoughtful way. And it all started with securing the borders. And I think that everyone has seen that progress probably even faster than we anticipated. Turns out when you have consequences for behavior, people change their behavior. Mm. And we've definitely seen that. And so now getting to what do we do with the folks here? You know, the president has established the voluntary deportation program that's been pretty darn effective. I think numbers between 500,000 or over a million of folks have voluntarily deported so that they can come back legally. Mm-hmm. That's a positive. And then figuring out, you know, like you said, we've got a lot of workers here from Ukraine and some of these other countries that came here under the last administration under kind of some sweeping programs, figuring out ways to fairly address those folks. They're baked into a lot of businesses in North Dakota, and they've extended the program that allows them to stay here, the Trump administration has for Ukrainians. But they still need to do a little work on the work visa piece of it. Our office is actively pushing on that effort, too. So, and then there's some long term. There's some, you know, wide variety of proposals out there in Congress that we'll be working on this fall. I anticipate very seriously.
OK, good. So that's great. A lot of people I know, especially in the services businesses, are really looking to get those people here. I also want to ask you about your Medicaid editorial that you put together. It appeared in a number of different newspapers around the state of North Dakota, and I thought it was really well written. You are making a point in this that we're going, all the people that are sounding the alarm about, oh, we cut Medicaid in the One Big Beautiful Bill, and no, we're not going to have Medicaid. You made a couple of really interesting points that we're going to spend more on Medicaid tomorrow than we do today, but we're spending it on the right things and the right people. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. Well, that's where, you know, the other issue that comes up a lot is Medicaid, just because there's been so much misinformation and fear mongering on this issue that has occurred. And I think people are legitimately concerned that we might have actually done these horrible things that folks are accusing us of, which the truth is we haven't. We've made reforms, sensible reforms, to secure the program long term for the people who need it the most, the disabled, the elderly, and the, you know, like pregnant women who are poor. they need health care. This is was intended for them, and that's what we're refocusing on. And so these reforms are intended to help require that able-bodied people between the ages of 18 and 64, adults who can work, that they do work. Again, to the point of we need more workers. We have workforce. We have people who are currently not working that could be working. Let's get them up. Let's help them get working and engaged in our communities and being productive and become upwardly mobile.
Yeah.
There's sensible work requirements added to the program to help those folks who can work get engaged and re-engaged in our
Absolutely.
Communities. Yeah. And that will save a lot of money and help protect the program long-term for the others who are disabled who really can't work.
Yes.
And so they aren't going to be required to. We're doing eligibility testing to make sure that the people receiving the benefits actually qualify. That's just good government. That's just being responsible with taxpayer dollars. I don't know anybody who objects to that. And so these are sensible reforms. Again, like you said, and like I have said over and over again, we will spend more money on Medicaid tomorrow than we're spending today, but we're trying to direct it at the folks who are needing it the most.
Super important point. Absolutely. And thanks for doing your best to pound the table on that, because it really does seem to be political. If you really look at this and you get the information, it's really hard to argue with what was done in a rational perspective. But people need to hear those things, because like you said, they're hearing the other side of that, a politicized argument. So appreciate the work there. Chris Wright was in Grand Forks yesterday, and I understand you had a chance to be up there too. Kind of cool to be from North Dakota these days, right? We got Doug Burgum in the administration. We got secretaries coming here as well. How encouraging is it knowing that North Dakotans are having their voice heard and our story is being told at the highest levels?
Well, I love it, because I think North Dakota provides a great model for what our country needs. Like the way we run our state, the way we manage our economy, the way North Dakotans really live their lives in terms of like being independent, resourceful, problem solving. This is what we need more of in our country. We aren't victims in North Dakota. We try to go out and take advantage and use the resources that we have to help better our quality of life here. And Chris Wright knows that. He is the cabinet members that President Trump has pulled in are truly experts in all of their areas of work. And they aren't professional government people. They have been in the fields that they're now regulating. And so it's an awesome asset for our country to have these minds like Chris Wright working on this.
Yeah.
He knows that energy, the reason why we develop energy, is to help make life better for people. That's the whole point.
Yes.
So let's make sure we're doing that.
I love it.
That's a simple concept, and it's just so profound.
Mm-hmm.
He's so disarming. He's just a really great guy. He's done business in North Dakota. He knows what we're all about, and he's a great advocate for us, helping us do more.
Yeah, and you said it. Like, every one of these administration members, they are just running around with their hair on fire. It's like the urgency to get stuff done is like nothing I can remember seeing in any administration before. Maybe I'm just looking for it more than I used to be, but everybody, it feels like they're motivated, they're being held accountable, and they're just going to go ahead and get things done. And if you don't like the administration, what they're doing, these are the worst of times for you. But if you do like what's happening, these are really good times. Speaking of good times, I think we are all hoping that in our economy, as the days go by, that businesses, small and large, are all going to see good things from the Trump administration. The One Big Beautiful Bill, I thought, did some really smart things at the macro level, where big businesses and Wall Street really needed to get some building blocks in place going forward. And so I think a lot of good things were done there. I do feel like there's an opportunity, though, to do more for small businesses who are not expensing large capital purchases, you know, at the end of the year, not buying businesses. Some of the big manufacturers, there's incentives for them to, you know, repatriate some money to come back to the United States. The tariffs and the things that are going on there as well. There's a lot to like for Wall Street in One Big Beautiful Bill. The Main Street story might be a little harder to find. And my honest question for you, Julie, is there hope that the president might loosen up the SBA a little bit, maybe do another Paycheck Protection Program, something like that, or something that really takes small businesses and gives them some rocket fuel to go forward. Because as much as we appreciate our big business brothers and sisters, a lot of the world is run by small businesses, certainly in our state. What more can the president do, and what conversations are you having with the administration about taking care of small businesses in a very real way?
Well, I guess I would disagree a little bit with your premise that the One Big Beautiful Bill doesn't include items for small businesses. Really what this bill does is try to correct and create fundamentals that are good for all business. And I think when you look at the legal, tax, and regulatory climate, those are the keys that affect everybody. We have to have a low tax environment so people can keep as much money as possible. We did that with One Big Beautiful Bill for everybody. We would have had the highest tax increase in U.S. history if we hadn't. We extended and made permanent the 199A small business deduction. So folks who qualify under this type of tax filing can deduct up to 20% of their income from their business, from their federal taxes, directly related to small businesses. A lot of small businesses, you know, they have expenses for equipment. They might do some research and development. All of those expenses can be 100% deductible permanently. Moving forward, that affects all businesses. There's accelerated depreciation for any capital investments they might have. That's made permanent. I would also say, like, some of the targeted policies for workers that help small businesses, like the servers that might work in a restaurant or the workers on a construction site, they earn overtime, they earn tips, and we eliminated taxes on tips for those workers, so that makes those jobs a little bit more appealing. So I think there's quite a lot in this bill for all business. And I'm more of a, let's make the economy strong with the fundamentals rather than having targeted programs or spiffs for any specific category of people. We also need to work to drop the interest rates, you know, decreasing spending on the government, reducing the size of the government, the cost is important, and reducing the regulatory burden that affects a lot of small businesses. That's front and center to this administration's work, and Republicans in the House and the Senate were working very aggressively on that too.
Yeah, so I would agree with a lot of what you said there, Congresswoman, and I think you make good points. I will just tell you that from a small business perspective, and I happen to be a person who sits in one of those chairs, yes, you're right. We continued a lot of things that we had already, and that's good. We didn't want to lose those things. But big business got some really nice new things in this legislation that small business didn't. And at our level, if you got a company that's 100 employees or less, not many of us are doing research and development or buying capital goods or starting up big factories or things like that. So maybe we just have to agree to disagree on that I feel like, and I know that many small business people that are my peers feel like, God, you know, this is all good and we like that and everything you said is true, but gosh, we could have used a little something here too, because we are the ones that are being hit really, really hard. If you're a Fortune 500 company, you can withstand, you know, the downturns a little easier because of the scale of your economy in that business. Small businesses don't really have those credit lines and those big reserves. And, you know, we've got, you know, $500 billion in sales annually, and we can just offload some things here and there. So I might just leave that with you as a thought. And whether you agree with it or not, I believe that there is that sentiment among small businesses out there. And we can go with wherever we go.
One more quick bit of information to add to that mix. You know, one of the areas that helps small business the most is the Small Business Administration. And I think that that agency has been kind of riddled with regulatory overreach and slow operations, et cetera. And the new administrator of that agency is working really hard. They've got record number of SBA loans in the first few months of the Trump administration since January. They've decentralized a lot of their employees, moving more than 30% of them out into the field. And so that's an area where we can, you know, make sure that small businesses are having access to, in a in a streamlined way all the existing government programs that are out there to help small businesses. That's an important piece as well.
Yeah, very important. And I know that Brooke Rollins has done that at USDA as well, and we love that. It's really good to get those people out closer to where the farming and the small business is at, get them out of Washington, D.C. a little bit more. So good piece of information. All right, last thing, I've got to talk about the Canada smoke. And I'm sure you get this question all the time. And I know the answer is, Steve, there's not a lot that we can do. But, oh, my gosh, Julie, we're losing our summer Saturdays and weekends and our T-ball games because the kids, you don't want them out in that necessarily. Is there something, like, can we help Canada? There's got to be a way to put out fires. I know that it's millions of acres of forest and whatever, but there are fire retardants and things that can take care of this. And I don't know how we do it, but it just seems like we've got to try to do something here to maybe help or bill our friends in Canada. I don't know, but do you have any creative ideas? Because this is ruining our summers.
I have heard this a lot. It's so frustrating for North Dakotans, for everyone. I think the scale of the fires is so massive that we can't really comprehend how big they are, for one. But additionally, a meeting with Governor Armstrong here in the next couple of weeks, and this is going to be a subject that we talk about to see if he has additional thoughts or if there's some way we can get a whole delegation together to get some action on this additionally that isn't happening already. But yeah, it's a huge frustration and something that we definitely need to be doing everything that we can if we're not doing it already.
Yeah, I know that it's got to make sense. Like, you can't spend $50 trillion trying to put out the fires. I get all of that, but I know I have to believe that in 2025, the year of our Lord, that there's some way, somehow to do this. I don't know if it's practical or not. I hope that someone understands and I know that you do, but I hope someone at the highest levels understands how frustrating that is for those of us here, Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana. I mean, we're all getting it right now, and it's, these are just tough days when you see this happening. So I don't know. I just hope that there's something that can be done along the way. If someone could figure out how to do that, they would win re-election for life in the state of North Dakota. So there's your challenge, Julie.
I want to be re-elected for life, Steve.
Oh, come on. We need good conservatives out there fighting the fight. So, all right.
We'll do it for, as long as I can, but not for life.
Okay, I get you. All right, young lady, we'll let you go. I appreciate your time so much today. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
You too. Julie Fedorchik, North Dakota's lone congresswoman, congressman, woman, congressional representative, joining us here on the Steve Holisham Show. All right, coming up on the top of the hour, Addison's giving me the stink eye because we went a little long with that one. I'm sorry, Addison, but it was too good to pass up the conversation there. So we will make it up to our fine sponsors as we continue here on the Steve Holisham Show. Top 5 of 5 is coming up next. The city commission the county commission in Cass County and the city of Fargo are having a little squabble about the jail. That and more coming up next. Here we go, hour number 2 of the Steve Holisham Show. And it's brought to you in part by Rowan Joe, junk haul and removal. When it's got to go, call Rowan Joe. Whether it's commercial, residential, you need stuff cleaned out, they're the people to get the job done. John Minton is a 30-year combat vet, locally owned company, veteran-owned company. That means your money stays local, and the job's going to be done by a guy who knows how to get the job done. Don't trust those out-of-towners, the 1-800 number people. They don't know how we do stuff here. Trust local people who have a reputation to protect, and when they put their name on a job, it's their family reputation at stake. You think that some 800 get the junk out of here people are going to look at it the same way? Heck no. You got to call Rowan Joe. Rowan Joe Junk Haul and Removal. When it's got to go, call Rowan Joe. ROENJOJunk.com. ROENJOJunk.com. And get the job done right. All right, it is time for us to get into the top 5 at 5. And these are what I believe to be the most consequential stories in the news cycle today. These are stories that, for me, pass the so what test. And there's a lot of stories out there that you hear other people talking about, and I just go, okay, that's good to know. But there's a bunch of stories out there today that I feel like really matter to us at a level that's going to affect our future, our family's future, our community. things that really matter. And not all news stories are created equal, I don't think. So here we go. Story number one, there is a spat between the Cass County Commission and the city of Fargo, and they are apparently at odds over how to extend an existing jail inmate housing contract. And during the county commission meeting yesterday, the panel decided that next time around, they're going to take a vote on doing a contract termination with the city of Fargo. Now, think about what this means. This means city of Fargo can't bring inmates to the jail. What? That will not work. So they've got to find some common ground here. Apparently, two concerns are, number one, there is a kind of a difference of opinion about keeping inmates' personal items in storage. So Steve gets busted for whatever he gets busted, and he's got a backpack, and he's got a wallet, he's got a laptop in his backpack, he's got some beef jerky, whatever it might be. Well, there is apparently kind of a sticking point there where Sheriff Johnner says, we just don't have the room to store all that stuff. And if we're going to have, you know, hundreds of people here, that's a lot of stuff, and how are we going to do it there? And some of that stuff can be hazardous, explosives, guns, whatever. Another item that has come up is the ability for police officers to carry weapons in the jail. That is also a difference of opinion there. And apparently, from what I understand now, the city wants their police officers to be able to have their weapons in the jail. And the jail administration says that's not very good. What happens if, you know, the inmate overpowers you, gets a gun in the jail? Nothing good can happen there. So they got to get this figured out here. Our news team has reached out to the city for a comment, and we're waiting to hear back. So that's story number one. Story number two, we know more today about why four senior members of the city of Fargo's communications department abruptly resigned. They are going to be working through the week, and then they are done. And it includes the two top officials, the chief communications officer and the assistant chief. The chief is Greg Schildberger, at least he will be for about the next few days. And he says that there is a concern about the work environment there. And he says, I don't know how the communications team can keep doing what they're asked to do and have any life outside of work as well. And he said, it's just gotten worse over time. You need to be making decisions that are in your best interest. And that's kind of where we're at. Similar sentiments, according to the Forum, who reports this today, were passed along by Edish in her resignation letter. She said, ongoing levels of stress, daily anxiety, and toxic work culture fostered by leadership have made it impossible for me to continue in good conscience. Ironically, the employment complaint and investigation that is taking place now comes from a staffer who alleged that there was a hostile work environment there and bad leadership practices and workplace standards from her superiors, who are now the people who are accusing city leaders of fostering that same sort of culture. So isn't that interesting? Sort of a, I don't know, systemic, cultural, I don't know what it is, but seems like nobody's happy. Everybody thinks that everybody's on their back down there. Story number three comes to us today from the North Dakota News Cooperative, and they have released the results of their summer 2025 survey. And they surveyed a number of people across the state of North Dakota, 625 North Dakota voters, and asked them, do you approve or disapprove of President Trump, Governor Armstrong, the two U.S. senators, and the Congresswoman Fedorchuk, who was just on a little bit ago. I probably should ask her what she thought about her numbers, but it just doesn't seem all that important to me. But I do think it's interesting to see what has happened with the support levels with President Trump and Governor Armstrong. Kelly Armstrong, the governor, enjoys the highest approval rating in the state, 66%. Donald Trump close behind at 64%. And then you get Senator John Hoeven, who's right behind him at 63, Kevin Cramer at 59, Julie Fedorchuk at 54. Now, there is a response category here about, I'm not sure what to think about this person. And I don't think it's a surprise that Julie Fedorchuk, being the newcomer of the bunch, there's a lot of people that just don't know what to make of her yet. So 19% of people said, I'm just not sure. Where Donald Trump, everybody knows what to make of Donald Trump. You either love him or you don't. His not sure is 1%. which I would like to talk to somebody in the 1%, by the way, and just say, what about Donald Trump are you not sure about? Like, you cannot escape news and commentary about Donald Trump. So I don't know. I'm just curious. It must be somebody who just, I don't know, lives in a very remote area. I'm not sure about that. So interesting there about the performance there. Now, Donald Trump, if you're wondering, and most people are, he got 67% of the vote in North Dakota in the 24 election. So his numbers have dipped just a little. I don't know, 3%. Not really much that you can point to there. They're about the same. Some people will say, oh, Donald Trump's not as popular in North Dakota. He is. I did think that an interesting footnote when you break down some of the finer points of the questioning, Donald Trump's lowest approval numbers, guess where? Just guess. Yep, you're right. Fargo. 56% approval in Fargo, 43% disapprove. So in the city of Fargo, Trump is only plus 13. I think that's interesting. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but it does tell you that things are different. So 43% disapprove, where statewide there's 35. I guess it sort of makes sense. You've got so many people in Cass County and Fargo area. I think I saw that a quarter of the population of North Dakota is in Cass County. So that's interesting there. There was a note about that that I saw here in this story, and now it escapes me. But there's a big percent of people in North Dakota that are in Fargo and Cass County. So I'll find that somewhere along the line and give that to you there. But it's like about a quarter of the population. So interesting there. So that's story number three. Story number four. Mortgage rates are at their lowest level since October of 2024. You have to wonder if this is going to get people off the couch and getting that purchase order written up or that refinance done. The average 30-year fixed rate mortgage through yesterday was at 6.58%. It was last week 6.63, so down 0.05. The average 15-year mortgage, 5.71%, down from 5.75 a week earlier. Now, rates are moving lower, they say, on the story that I'm reading here from Yahoo Finance, after fresh inflation data furthered Wall Street's conviction that the Federal Reserve is going to cut benchmark interest rates in September. Yeah, there's, like I heard today, there's a 98% chance the market feels is basically baked into the cake. There'll be at least a quarter point, and there's like a 5% chance there'll be a half point. Now, mortgage rates are not controlled by the Federal Reserve, but they do tend to kind of move in conjunction there in response to expectations about Fed policy and how they're going to cut rates. So they're not directly tied to that, but they do seem to follow indirectly. So there you go. Thought that was worth pointing out. I would be curious, and if somebody is in the mortgage business who's listening to this today, please give me a call at 701-271-1100, because I'd love to hear from you. Or you can text it, 237-1590. Are more people getting into adjustable rate mortgages now because the rates for those are less? My guess is you can get into a 5-year adjustable rate mortgage at maybe 5%, 5.25%, or something like that, where you get, you know, 5 years, it's locked in at a lower interest rate, and then 5 years from now, it's going to reset to some other rate, kind of at the going rate. Well, if you think that mortgage rates are going to go lower, which I really do, that's not a bad idea. I would typically not like to go for the adjustable rate because you can have a surprise after 5 years, but 5 years is a little while. And if rates come down, you can always refinance that 30-year fix or another ARM, I guess. You just got to pay the closing costs when you do it. So I'm curious if more people are doing, even in our little conservative Scandinavian hot dish part of the world, if we are people who are saying, you know, maybe that ARM might be the way to go. So if you have any intel on that, let me know. You don't have to have like statistical data, but just anecdotally, what are you hearing? And finally, The number that made me go, did I hear that right? And I did. Wholesale prices rose 0.9% in July, much more than expected. We've talked a fair amount over the last 3-4 weeks about numbers that just don't quite make sense. And we've seen some of them where we had a month where there was like a 0% CPI, consumer price index, a 0%, like there was no increases at all in prices. And I said to you at the time when that number came out, like, you guys, that can't be true. It cannot be accurate. And we all know government data is sketchy, to say the least. So this is another number that I'm like, I'm not buying it. So the producer price index, 0.9%. The expectation of a Dow Jones analyst was 0.2. So we were like 4.5 times that high. This was the biggest monthly increase since the Biden administration, June 2022, when we had numbers like this every month. It was basically 1% more expensive than the last month. So I don't know if this number makes sense. It doesn't to me. I would have believed 4.4.5 maybe. That would have been a spike upward. This is crazy. Maybe it's right. I don't know. It's such an outlier. And like it comes after, you know, 0.2, 0.3, 0.2, 0.1, 0.0, 0.3, 0.2, and I was at 0.9. It doesn't make sense to me. Now, there is a lot of debate about this in economic circles today, and I had a chance to listen to Fox Business a little bit on what does this mean, especially when yesterday the consumer price index number came in pretty benign. I think it was 0.3 or 0.2, something like that. So you got 0.2, 0.3 on the consumer side. Producer price, this is the price that stores, like Target stores, what they have to pay for the product when Johnson & Johnson or whoever sends products to them. That measures what those prices look like before they pass them on to you in the store. And you could say, in theory, if producer price indexes are high, well, it's just a matter of time until it's going to be passed along to the end user, you and me, when we go and buy them. But I did hear some debate today about this, and one of the thoughts that came out on this was that, okay, the producer price index is not all that far ahead of consumer prices. So what this is really meaning is that the importers and the wholesalers are swallowing some of those price increases and not passing them along to the end-use customer. Now, I hope that's true. And that would be great. And we've heard some companies say that. I remember Home Depot came out about a month ago and said, whatever price increases we're seeing, we think we're going to be able to figure out how to do that so we're not passing along to the customer. Not everybody's Home Depot, right? So can everybody do that? I don't think so. But when you've got 0.2 on a consumer, 0.9 on producer price index, to me, one of those numbers is out of whack. And I don't know which one it is, but this will be an interesting thing to watch. I will be watching with great interest what the August consumer price index number looks like. And if the August number comes in at 0.2, 0.3, something like that, month over month, then I'll say this was just, I don't know, somebody forgot to carry the one on this deal. And we've seen plenty of that, right? The revisions downward later on. So we'll see what happens there. But this was a shocker. This was a stunning number. And most people on Wall Street that I was hearing or reading commentary about today were like, yeah, I don't know about this number. So we'll see what happens. That might have been more than you wanted on this. But hey, look, we're talking about how much things cost for you and me to buy them. And in this case, how much the stores are paying for things. So sooner or later, you'd think that makes its way down to you and me. That's why I want to spend a little time on it today. All right, 525 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. And that is, friend, a look at the top five at five. When we come back here on the program, I want to give you an update on our favorite local athlete. Can I say it that way? I'm going to go with that. Our favorite local athlete, pro athlete, and he is having a very good day at one of the biggest events on the PGA Tour. And Tom Hoagie has not had a lot of great days lately. Go, Tommy, go. I'll tell you what's shaking when we come back. I just like the way this song starts. Is that wrong that I get to listen to this for a few seconds? I think it's a good way to bring in the next segment of the show. All right, so Tom Hoge started off great at the start of the year on the PGA Tour. He was one of the guys people were saying, hey, Tommy may have a shot at Ryder Cup team this year. He's up there in the FedEx points. But boy, the last probably 6 to 8 weeks have been really tough for Tom. But because of how his year started out, he is still in a pretty good position to continue in the PGA playoffs. They're in the second leg of the PGA Tour playoffs this week, and today is round one of the BMW Championship, and I think this is in Chicago somewhere. And so based on how this whole points thing works, Tom needs to, I think I saw he needs to be in like the top 13. So needs to end this tournament top 13. Now, he hasn't been anywhere near that lately, but he is having a very good day today in round one. He is through 10 holes today. He's got two birdies, no bogeys, a bogey-free card so far through 10 holes. And he is at 2 under par, tied for seventh. And the leader right now is Scottie Scheffler, surprise, surprise. And Scottie, the number one ranked player in the world. And he is at 4 under par in the clubhouse. A couple other guys on the course are at -4 as well. So not only is Tommy in the top 10, but he's within shouting distance of the lead right now. And go, Tom, go. I think it's awesome. And it takes some intestinal fortitude and a little courage to have a bad stretch and then all of a sudden turn things around quickly. And it looks like he is doing that. So fun stuff there. We'll keep watching him through the weekend. All right, 5:30 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we continue, I had a very interesting text message come in. I want to read that. Basically calling me out on my comments about tariffs and Trump favoring the rich and all those things. And so I think it's a fair question, and I want to give something of a rebuttal to that. Could be an interesting little conversation for us. We'll do that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. First, though, we got a check of news and weather. Don't go away. All right, from the text line, I love tough questions. I really do. And even if someone disagrees and says, hey, Hallstrom, you're a hypocrite, I have no problem with that. And sometimes they're right. I try to have the conversation and then let everybody decide what they think. And I get it. If you don't like me or don't like Trump or don't like some of the policy or whatever, I'm never going to convince somebody if they don't want to be convinced. But let's have the conversation and at least have an honest chat about the issue at hand. So from the text line, Steve, the other day I sent a text about the top 1% never having tax rates this low and should be raised. Your response was, how much is too much? And that's 100% right. I mean, if you factor in all the other taxes that you pay, if you're in New York or Minneapolis or whatever, you're paying, what, 50, 55, 60% in taxes of some kind. So at some point, how much is too much? So text goes on. So when Trump raises taxes by tariffs, and everyone knows tariffs are paid by the populace, which is true, except when wholesalers and businesses pay them or just figure out ways through automation or whatever to change profit margins. So not always, but most of the time, I'm not going to disagree too much with the premise there. Tariffs are a regressive tax affecting the lower 99% to the benefit of the 1%. You talk about how great it is, way to support the rich at the harm of everyone else. Okay, so I think I would disagree with your position on Trump's tariffs are hurting 99% so he can benefit the 1%. I think you've got to work really hard to try to come up with that as your main takeaway on all of that. Now, you may be right. You might be right that this was Donald Trump sitting there going, how can I really screw over the school janitor so that my buddy who runs a Wall Street firm can make more money? That's possible. You might be right. I don't know that it really works that way. So we haven't, and here's why, and what I would say in response to that. Again, you may be right. You may be right. Let me play devil's advocate. We haven't seen that yet. Now, today is the first hint of tariffs really being inflationary. And I get it. You have to kind of forget about inflationary because tariffs are not inflationary. They're a one-time jolt They reset the price picture, but then they're not necessarily always going to go up the same amount. Tariffs tend to be a one-time adjustment, a recalibration. And at that point, yes, the prices we pay for things are still going to remain elevated, but they're not inflationary. It's a little bit of a subtlety, but you get my point. So to this point, even yesterday's CPI, we didn't see what you are talking about here, where this is really hurting low-income people. We just haven't seen it. Now, could we see it? Absolutely. And that's why I said I'm going to be really interested in what the CPI looks like in August. But you have to agree with me that to this point, tariffs have not been an issue. We also have had many companies come out and say that we think we can handle what's going to happen in the certain products without passing it along to the customer. We can figure out some way to run a more efficient business. We can find a way to do automation, whatever. And so there may not be a big impact passed along to the customer. There hasn't been so far. Time will tell what we see going further. I would also remind you that tariffs are not imposed on every product out there. Generally, it's goods that are imported. And that is, I think I heard somebody say that like 30% of the products that are on the store shelf fit, or that we buy, not products that we buy, but 30% of the things that we buy, because we buy services, right? Someone comes to, you know, trim your patch or whatever. So it doesn't affect everything. And I would remind us all that because a product is higher cost in the grocery store or in the hardware store, it doesn't mean I have to buy it, okay? I would also say rich pay the same increases. It's not like I can walk in and say, I'm the 1%, and so I don't want to pay more for that thing. Now, the rich people are able to absorb that a lot easier, but it's not true that rich people pay any less of an increase for that product. I would tell you also, and I'm just winging this off the top of my head, so sorry if it's not real organized, I believe that Trump is doing the tax rate changes for some balance, and fuel policy does the same thing. Basically, the tax rates, if you look at the tax rates that Trump put in, they were, in many cases, people in that second and third tax bracket up, people basically, you know, making $7,000 or more, they were getting as big of a benefit from the 2016 Tax Cuts and Job Act than people even in the highest percent were getting. Now, people on the high end got, 2.6%? So that was not nothing. I get that. But that was not the only group that was getting some kind of an adjustment there. Tariffs also, I think we need to remember, it's not just the inflation changes that we have and the cost of goods. Tariffs also are increasing revenue to this country so we can offer these tax breaks, things like the senior discount in the tax legislation as well. So look, again, I'll say this. You might be right. And you might be right that Trump is motivated by trying to make things worse for poor people. I don't know that to be true, but you might be right. I just think we're going to need to wait a little bit longer to see what the effect is at the consumer level, not the wholesale level, the consumer level, because to this point, we haven't seen what you are saying is hurting everybody. 543, Steve Alstrom Show. All right, when we come back on the program, we're going to have a conversation with a gentleman that I'm looking forward to meeting, and I'm very excited for you to meet him as well, Pastor Dave Scarlett. And he's got some interesting perspective on the Russiagate investigation and conversation that's going place in our community, going across in our community. And we'll talk to Pastor Dave about that as we continue on the Steve Alstrom Show. A lot of us are hoping that the Russiagate investigation and the price that needs to be paid by many for this hoax on the American people never loses steam. And our next guest is doing his best to make sure that it doesn't. David Scarlett is a former U.S. Marine, Texas pastor, chairman and founder of His Glory Ministries. This guy has done an awful lot, and he has some interesting perspective on J.D. Vance's recent statements about you're going to see a lot of people get indicted over Russiagate, and we're pleased to welcome him to the program here on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Good afternoon, Pastor Scarlett. How are you?
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, thanks for doing it. I'm just going to let you take it from there. A lot of us are really hoping that there is some accountability for this horrific hoax that really hamstrung President Trump during his first 4 years in office. And J.D. Vance is making some big claims. Do you think it's going to happen?
I do think it's going to happen. JD wouldn't have said that unless that was the case. I see, Kash Patel, who I know well, is making moves with the FBI. I had President Trump's personal attorney and childhood friend, went to a military school academy together, on with me last week two times, Peter Tichtin. And Peter was just, he dropped really a bombshell that they are going to be held accountable and arrests are coming.
So we will see indictments.
We will see indictments.
Do you think this country is really ready to see? I'm not talking about you and me, Pastor Scarlett. I'm just talking about the average American to see Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton be brought up on charges that could result in jail time. Do you think that the country, and maybe I should say the Congress, is going to really want to see that?
Well, the American people are starting to get a little more awake. I think that's a part of the process of just these leaks coming out. You like the Epstein files is a good example of that. You know, you got the left looking for a smoking gun on President Trump, and you have all the fake news just running that 24/7, Epstein, Epstein, Epstein. What is happening is the American people are now saying, well, what is this all about? And they're doing research, and they're getting closer to what the truth is going to be. And you mentioned Obama and Clinton going to jail. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't expect that to happen. They need to go to military tribunals, because we're not talking about just crimes. We're talking about sedition and treason at the highest levels.
So that's taking incarceration to the next level. I am doubtful. I hope there is accountability. And if there's jail time, then whatever the penalties are, and I understand what you're saying, that the chances of this country allowing Barack Obama to be executed in a military tribunal are zero. Do you agree with that? That's my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I don't know if we're quite there yet, but I think once you start seeing the proof that comes out and it's slow leaking, there's more bombshells, I'm told. I had John Solomon of Just the News on yesterday. Actually, it played today, and he said there's another bombshell coming out tomorrow that will tie the whole Clinton scenario, the whole process together. And again, Peter Tichtin on with me last week two times laid it out, saying this is the biggest scandal in the history of the United States. It's
Agree.
Not just about Russia hoax.
Yes.
This ties in the auto pen. It ties into the elections that were stolen. It ties into the CCP. Those are not my words. Those are Peter Tichtin's words. And when a lawyer speaks in those terms, it's kind of shocking for him to say. I was shocked that he actually came out and was so direct about it. And he said not only that, but January 6th, one of the most horrendous things that's happened of this insurrection was a cover-up of the 2020 election. He says he has video evidence to prove that this was a hoax, and they have videos showing that this started way before January 6th.
Yeah, I've been watching some of these developments over the last couple of years or so, and finding myself really disappointed at what actually has happened with some of the quote-unquote accountability. We were told by people within the Trump administration and other high-ranking executives within Congress as well, we have the goods on Joe Biden and the money coming from overseas and the bribes and the scandal and whatever. We have the goods, we have the information, and they never gave it to us. And I found out from our local congressman here, or our congressman in the state, that he said, well, you know what? I don't think Congress really has the stomach to actually bring this about, and Joe Biden's getting ready to leave and so forth. I remain unconvinced that people really will bring these things forward in the way that will lead to these kind of accountabilities going forward here. Why should we believe that this time will be any different than all the other times when we've heard the cry wolf game?
Well, I think if you just watch the moves that President Trump's making, you know, you look at the, you know, National Guard in Washington, D.C., you think deeper into why would he do that? Why is he talking about bringing it to Chicago, New York City, Baltimore? We know that protesters are going to start this weekend in Washington, D.C., paid protesters. But the two biggest keys that President Trump did out of the gate shows you that he is means business was DOGE. Cutting those funding off, where we as the American people didn't know where this money was going. That's the underbelly of the deep state. That was phase one. Shut off the money, because that's what keeps them funded. The second is trace that money back to who's doing it, to follow the money trail. And that's what Peter Thichten again said last week. He said they have discovered $1.6 trillion with a T just with Act Blue alone. Just Act Blue.
Yeah, huge money. All right, so what's the next thing we look for? How do the dominoes start to fall? What should we be looking for next?
I think you're going to see an arrest at the appropriate time. I'm not sure if we're there yet because of what you said. I think the more information comes out to the American people, because people say, well, why didn't they do this before? We would have had a civil war because half the country was going to go after President Trump because the fake news sold them that the Russia hoax was true. We have 51 so-called national security experts that knew that that Russia hoax was a lie. And they still sign their name on it, and they're still doubling down on that today. It's time for those people to be held accountable. And I asked the president's attorney the same question. Why should we be assured that something's going to happen this time? And the exact words were, if we don't do something now, we've lost our republic.
Yeah. Well, there needs to be written in the annals of time, whatever that word is, that somewhere, at some point, somebody stood up and said enough. And a lot of us are hoping that this is that time. Pastor Scarlett, we appreciate you joining us. Keep spreading the good word out there, my man. Thanks for doing what you're doing for the kingdom. And thanks for keeping these conversations going. We appreciate you taking some time today.
Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Take care. You bet. You can follow Pastor Scarlett on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, @PSDave_Scarlett, @PSDave_Scarlett, and find out more about that. I do hope there's accountability. I hope there's jail time. There's not going to be a firing squad. There just isn't. And I'm highly doubtful there will be jail time, too. And Scotty was asking the question on What's On Your Mind show today. Like, if there's just if these people get exposed, is that enough? I don't know if it is, because there are a lot of people that exposed just means that, oh, that's the crazy right-wing media saying that there's a problem. So I think there needs to be some kind of jail time for if all this is true. And that's a big if, but it certainly seems like there's a lot there. Tulsi Gabbard thinks there is. All right, well, we're going to head on down to the other end of the hall for our big tax bill town hall starting here in just a few minutes. Until then, keep on flying that flag for the next 5 minutes or so, and we'll see you back here. And you can watch us as well on YouTube and our website as well. See you soon.